It is Saturday, March 25th, 2006, 10:06 a.m. on the Central Coast of California. Today, we're talking about home and small business storage solutions.
GeekSpeak is a production of KUSP, Central Coast Public Radio, kusp.org. The bandwidth for geekspeak.org is provided by GNI, gnihosting.com.
The photos, movies, and files on your home computer are stored in millions of small polarized magnetic domains written to the disk by transmitting an electromagnetic flux through a read-write head that is very close to a high-speed platter. These puppies are prone to failure, but don't worry, lots of geeks have thought this problem through. The solution? Use a lot more drives. Confused yet? You will be. It's time for GeekSpeak. We think. All right, I guess we're not doing...
Being cool.
Let me put your mic up, Miles.
Being cool. Eliminate the ninnies and the twists.
I swear you've been waiting to do that all your life. Keep going. This program is...
Man, you know it, Cole. All
right. Welcome to GeekSpeak, bridging the gap between geeks and the rest of humanity. I'm your host, Lyle Trox. So please keep in mind the views expressed during GeekSpeak are not necessarily those of KOSP. Following some geek news, we'll be joined by Sam Fang, Director of Marketing at Infront Technologies, as we talk about some network-attached storage solutions that might work in your home to ensure your data is safe and secure. During the second half of the show, I welcome you to join our conversation. The numbers are 476-2800, toll-free at 1-800-655-5877, or contact us now. Go to geekspeak.org and click on Contact Us. I'll give out that information again when I invite your participation in about half an hour. GeekSpeak is supported by Henry J. Ramirez, DDS in Santa Cruz, specializing in cosmetic and family dentistry, using digital technology for less radiation and offering one-appointment crowns and veneers. For appointments and more information, 423-2447. A little bit more music, Miles? And then I fade you out. All right. That's Miles Elam. We also have Drew Meyer, Sean Cleveland. Oh, you know, I should give you little plugs. So Drew Meyer is product manager at Network Appliance. Miles Elam's technical trainer at Surf Control. Sean Cleveland is technical marketing manager at NVIDIA. I'm Lyle Troxel, and we're going to do some geek news now. And we'll start with Miles because you're so vocal this morning. Hi, man.
Hey, man.
Got any news for me?
Yes, I do. As a matter of fact, as I switch back again, coming off guard there, there's a bit of a saga going on, mostly focused, or at least started on the East Coast, and is slowly spreading from there. The state of Massachusetts was standardizing on an office document format. Excel spreadsheets, word processing, and the like. And they had some concerns about using Microsoft Office, because what happens if Microsoft decides to pull their license for the software? They suddenly have no access to the documents that are of public record, things like that. Well, Microsoft has been steadily going back and forth with this, trying to get their particular flavor of Office document format in place. And one of the battlegrounds now is the ISO process, the International Standards Organization, for standardizing a Office document and the format of XML, in this case a structured document format. And what happened was Microsoft went to another standards organization, the ECMA, using it as an intermediary to get it fast-tracked, then be submitted to ISO. I'm sorry, this is all very complicated.
Yeah, that's okay. Yeah. Go on.
whereas the other one, open document format, is simply going through the
standard
channels.
Process.
Yeah, for mm-hmm. ISO. Microsoft decided to join the International Committee for Information Technology Standards. Now, small subcommittee, no one would really notice, except for the fact that its sole purpose is to evaluate open document format for inclusion into ISO.
Mm-hmm. So basically, there's two formats for a Word and Excel kind of open format, and one from Microsoft.
This will compete with Adobe Acrobat's PDF format.
More the existing Word document format.
This is supposed to give you a document that looks like the printed version that you can edit.
So it's like PDF.
Yeah.
So Microsoft and another open standard, they're kind of battling out on which one's going to be the de facto, and Microsoft has joined the body that looks at this other open standard.
So wait a minute. Is something new happened here?
Because I don't know.
This happens all the time in tech.
Yeah, but it's just annoying, though. The idea that instead of working on technical merits, you have someone going, oh, let's join the process so that way we can ask...
Here's a lot of money, but don't let this sway your decision.
Thank you, Miles, for the story. I'm going to go to the next.
Totally understand.
Drew?
Drew, go
for it.
Let's see. An Illinois man has been fired for piggybacking on his neighbor's Wi-Fi. He was actually war driving, which he was driving around with his notebook and trying to find an open, unsecure wireless network and surf the web. And he was sitting in Winnebago County, and the policeman kind of saw him sitting there tapping and walked up to him, knocked on the window, said, "Hey, what are you doing?" And he said, "Well, I'm surfing somebody's internet." The policeman figured it out and fined him $250 with a year of court supervision.
Under what charge?
It's a crime. I don't know what the charge is. The article doesn't say. He spotted him spotting him sitting in a parked car with a computer. A chat with the subject led to the arrest. So apparently that's illegal to surf your neighbors in Winnebago County.
By all means, someone correct me on on this, as I am not a lawyer, but it sounds similar to a tort. You're using someone else's resources without their permission.
Mm-hmm. Just the fact that it happened kind of blows me away, because I may know some people who have done this occasionally.
In California,
from time to time,
it's against the law to even have a notebook in your front seat of
while you're driving. Yeah. Well, interesting. I'd kind of like to hear the outcome of that case. I mean, is he going to fight it, or is he just going
to
take the fine?
Let me go to the Rockford Register Star and see exactly what the details are.
I'll let you do that while I talk to Sean about our next story. Mr. Cleveland, hi.
Good morning, Mr.
So, didn't get much sleep last night?
Oh, no, I got some sleep.
Working hard.
That's what coffee's for.
All right. So, what's your story today?
So, I don't know if anyone heard, but Microsoft Windows Vista is going to be delayed until January.
It's so weird, because it's really uncommon for Microsoft to do that.
Oh, but the timing. I think the big concern is the timing. Missing the Christmas buying season.
They missed the Christmas buying season. Yeah, it's going to be tough. But it sounds like it's not all their fault. OEMs in Taiwan really weren't ready for this. The system requirements for Vista are pretty steep. A lot of computers out there right now will not be able to run it. You'll need a pretty powerful little graphics processor. You'll need more memory. There are talks that you need at least 2 gigs of memory to play games on Vista.
Wow.
Yeah, but these are for the new Arrow UI.
Now, the Arrow UI.
User interface.
The user interface. So there's this WinSat, Windows system testing
blah, blah, blah,
utility
that
will be built into
strength.
Windows, that just a way to rank your computer, and everything will get a ranking. Your hard drive, 2 video rankings, your processor, your memory. It'll be scored, and they're not really giving us all the details, but it'll get a score. The lowest score will be the overall score of your computer. Mm-hmm. And to run Arrow, let's say you need a 3, but your video only got a 2.5. Well, then it's a 2, and you can't run Arrow.
So basically, when you're buying new hardware, as soon as Vista's out, you'll see numbers that rate the computer power. You'll be able to figure it out for yourself as well, and therefore determine what kind of features you can play and use in
Vista. So what a lot of people will find is when they install Windows, the pretty user interface, the Mac-like user interface that they want to experience, won't be available because the hardware won't be fast enough. Mm-hmm. So, and then there are talk that Microsoft had a huge shakedown in their software division, and 60% of the code for Vista needs to be rewritten.
I don't know.
That sounds all
Someone was
very
pulling
gossip.
A number out of somewhere.
But you know what? This delay is probably good for us, because all it's going to do is make for a more stable product.
Yeah.
And I'm perfectly fine with that with my operating system.
Well, it's funny. When we first heard the name of Vista, we talked about it being a long way off, because that's what Vistas are, and it sure is.
I think it's good for NVIDIA, though, isn't it, Sean? Coincidentally.
No, we're ready for it now.
No, I mean the fact that it demands so much more processing power stock in a graphics company.
You could assume that.
Right. But some manufacturers got a little upset, it sounds like.
Yes.
In Taiwan, and said, "We don't have hardware that can do this, and you're going to kill our business, and don't do that."
Yeah.
Instead of delaying.
Yeah.
Makes sense.
That's odd, though, because Vista has a lot of security-related features that are worth having. So even if you don't have the best video card, it still might be worth.
Yeah, but if you've got a manufacturer that 80% of their product doesn't actually support the best features of Vista, no one will buy it when Vista comes
out. It's an issue. There are a lot of analysts out there discussing this in detail. They've got access to this information.
And we're just little geeks.
So I'm not pushing NVIDIA at all. It's just that, I don't know. It's I'm concerned. I think my parents' computer could run it.
Yeah.
There could be a lot of people like that. You can run it. You'll be able to run it. It just won't look pretty.
It just won't look pretty. And why run it without look pretty? I guess security. Good point, Miles. Okay, Miles, Drew, Sean, thank you very much for doing the news. You're listening to Geek Speak. My name's Lyle Troxell, and the other geeks, Miles Elam, Sean Cleveland, and Drew Meyer. And we are now... Oh, Drew, do you have an issue?
Well, I just wanted to remind everybody that Winnebago County does have some laws against surfing someone's computer, wireless system, or internet connection without that person's approval.
Specifically that county?
Well, the article comes from that county, so I really am going out on a limb.
I wonder how widespread that is.
I don't know. Careful when you drive through Wisconsin.
A year of probation.
Thank you very much. I guess,
yeah, that's more painful than the $250.
Sam Feng is the director of marketing at Infront Technologies, maker of network-attached storage devices like the Ready NAS. Sam, welcome to GeekSpeak.
Thanks, guys.
Hey, Sam.
Sam, you were here a year ago.
Sorry. Yeah. I can't believe it. It's already been a year.
And we had this wonderful conversation, and so we wanted you back. And you've got a new product. And, Sean, you know something about this product.
Yes, I do. In fact, I have a unit, and I've been playing with it for the past week, and I'm very impressed with the form factor, first and foremost. When I pulled it out of the box, the experience was kind of fun.
You spent all night writing a beautiful review about this product.
Yeah, I wanted people to take a look at what we were talking about. I mean, we always hope that we can do this, and it just, with full-time jobs, we donate our time to do this, and I commute 2 hours a day. It's tough to make the time to pull a review out really quickly, but I'm really happy I was able to do it. So
geekspeak.org, click on today's show and you'll see a full review of the product we're talking about today. We're going to try to make our discussion about network attached storage and its benefits and such, not focusing completely on Infront solutions, but since we have the box in front of us and we have Sam, who, and you, of course, you're most familiar with that product.
We have Drew, who has a lot of experience with NAS devices.
We have some NAS expertise in here. So let's talk a little bit about NAS. First off, last week we talked about storage solutions on CDs and DVDs as like a permanent archiving solution. And some of the flaws of that, some of the things that you don't get from a system like that is the high-speed access to the data and the continual write and read of the data. So it's good for long-term storage, permanent storage, but not necessarily great for continually using the content. So a NAS is very similar to that product, if you were with us last week. It's just that it uses hard drives, and it's kind of like an external hard drive, but lots of people can access it. So let's let one of you talk.
Sam, why don't you tell us what a NAS is in friends' words, and why'd you guys design this thing? What's it for? Why should we care?
You know, the main thing is, I think with network attached storage, is like Lyle was talking about, people are getting a lot of valuable, digital content now. You know, not just the pictures are obviously one that's been talked about quite a bit already in the industry, but there are other things, your music collection, and even some people are starting to use this thing to store some video.
Yeah, you build this to be a media server.
Yeah.
And tell us a little bit about what it took to deliver those kind of capabilities.
Well, so there are a lot of these devices out there that are network enabled now. You know, essentially what they are is like a DVD player, but they don't have a DVD drive, and they just kind of have a network slot on the back. And what it does is it kind of connects up to your home network, and it looks for content on that network. You know, it could be on your PC, it could be on a network-attached storage device, and then it kind of streams the video or the audio from that source to the player. And we've gotten a lot of a good response from enthusiasts in this area, because while the PC is great for editing and maybe acquiring the content and things like that, they don't really want to have to leave their PC on all the time, because it consumes quite a bit of power. I think your lightest desktop's probably at least 200 watts of power. With our network attached storage device, not only do we offer RAID protection, but the power consumption is probably about a third. We're looking at, with four hard drives in the NV, we've measured the complete system to consume about 60 watts to 65 watts of power.
Like a light bulb.
That's nice. Like a front door light, yeah. But you can hook up, you can use this as your storage solution for video on like a media player at the television and stereo console?
Yep. Nice. As long as it's a network-enabled media player that's on the other end.
We see a lot of those. Basically, a lot of those are normally connect to a computer, and they tout that they can use the playing from a computer. Yep. And basically, you're saying, replace the computer with this, and then you're...
Complement the computer with this. Yeah. In other words, do all your editing on the computer, but that way you don't have to have your computer on all the time. Just imagine, your wife's downstairs, she's trying to watch a video that you have stored on the computer, and you're upstairs trying to use your computer, and you install an application or something like that, and you've got to reboot. It's going to disrupt her experience, which I don't think my wife would be too happy about. Mm-hmm. So, you offload after you've done editing the content, offload it onto the NAS, and then that way it's always available.
So I want to talk about this more in detail, definitely, but we should really start at the beginning as to what a NAS is.
Yeah, that would be nice.
True, please.
Well, network-attached storage is storage that connects to, you guessed it, your network instead of directly to your computer. And the whole point there is that this little box, it's as big as a toaster, it has its own power supply and a network connection, that's all there is. And inside of it are a bunch of hard drives. So you plug this thing into the wall, and then you plug the other connector into your network. And your home network is, you know, you plug this into your router, your DSL modem connects to your router, your cable modem connects to your router, all this stuff. The router is the center of your network. If you have a router, you have a network. If you have broadband, you probably have a network, or it's really easy to create a network. And the point of this NAS device is when it's connected to that network, like all the rest of the stuff, it's an independent standalone device. So now everything that you store is accessible to other people on the network, whether your computer's on or not. And that's the big difference. The storage is not trapped on the computer and only accessible by that one computer. It's accessible to any computer on the network. So in a business sense, that really makes a lot. It's a very powerful business tool. But as we see more and more media coming into the home, things like media, we mean things like digital videos that you took of your kids, the photos that you took of your family that you want to keep, the music on CD or MP3 that you downloaded from iTunes or that you just copied off your own CD-ROMs because you want your CDs in the car and you want to listen to the music on your PC separately. All that stuff has to go somewhere. It all takes up a lot of space. The other really cool thing about NAS, in addition to being instantly on and always accessible, is that it protects the data with multiple drives so that if a drive does fail, you don't lose everything.
That's the RAID protection that Sam was just mentioning?
Yeah, that's RAID. And Sam should talk about RAID because it's a really unique feature, and Infrant's got some pretty good design on that, as far as I know.
So, yeah, for the probably the vast majority of the people listening to this radio show, they kind of have some idea what RAID is. And it's a technology that's been around in the enterprise for quite a while. But it has required some type of IT expertise in order to manage and create these arrays. What we've done with...
What's an array, Sam?
Array is essentially a set of disks put together.
Oh. So is there an array in an infront in a NAS box? There's an array in there?
With all of the infront boxes, we're a four drive solution. So there's a four drive array in all of our products.
The benefit of having multiple drives, what is it?
Is that protection that Drew was alluding to earlier, that a hard drive is going to fail sooner or later. It's a mechanical device. It may last you a long time, but it's going to fail sooner or later. And with a properly configured RAID array, you can have a redundancy so that even if one of the hard drive fails, your data is still intact. You haven't lost anything.
It's also faster, isn't it? Because you're putting the data on, you're putting bits of the data on all the drives.
It does have certain speed advantages,
sort of a scale between the amount of redundancy or amount of protection you get and the amount of performance you get. So you can generally, people kind of compromise and go with a decent amount of protection and a decent amount of performance instead of screaming performance with no protection and crazy belt and suspenders protection, but slow performance.
So this drive, Sean built one of these yesterday with some Seagate drives, some 500 gig Seagate drives. That the article talks a bit about that. With four 500 gigabyte drives, how much storage is it?
Yeah, Seagate sent us four NL35 drives, and these drives are specifically made for RAID boxes for external storage, and they run cooler, quieter, and they do some of their own power management, which is really kind of cool. And they're meant to last a long time.
What's the performance like on them?
I'm going to put an article up just on those drives. Of course, I had four drives, so I figured, well, why not just test them on a desktop system?
And so you put them in this ReadyNAS NV.
Some RAID. But, I really haven't had a chance to test
the
performance.
So I plan on
updating the article to show that.
And how much storage is it?
Well, it's 2 terabytes.
That's raw now. How much do you actually get to use?
Almost 1.4.
1.4. And that includes typically, so the RAID protection costs you the value of one drive, or is it the capacity of one drive?
Exactly. So RAID 5, what that does is you have four drives in a RAID 5 array, and your data is on three of those drives, and there's what's called parity data on a fourth drive that works in such a way that if any of those drives fail, just one, your data's okay. Unfortunately, you have to use a lot of drives to, protect yourself against failure from two drives. But even then, you can really get mired in the details.
So, Sean, in testing this unit, are you gonna shoot one of those drives or something and kill it?
Yes, I've actually already done that.
You can just pull it out and disconnect it and test.
I've already done that. And what's nice about this particular unit, the ReadyNAS NV, is it has a little door that you open on the front and you push a button and the drive tray pops out.
And you pull
the drive out, replace it, and put a new one in.
With a new...
And then it rebuilds automatically.
Now, can you do that while the machine's running? Is this a hot swap?
So if you're, let's say your kid walks up and says, "Oh, Daddy, what's this?" and presses the button, just turn the unit off. and then put the drive back in, start it back up, and it'll notice
that it's okay.
It's okay, and it won't have to rebuild.
But when I do, so I do want to turn the machine off when I take the drives in and out.
No, actually, you don't have to. This particular model supports hot swap, so you can just pop it out when it's on.
You never have to disturb your wife's.
Exactly. But if you did pop it out, you'd have to rebuild the data, right?
Yeah, sure. But the device is still accessible. Yeah, you know, it's in that degraded, what they call it, degraded mode. But it's.
But
still
if you pop two drives while it's on,
goodbye.
Goodbye, data.
Game over.
Actually, our device, that's one of the things that kind of is unique. We have a life support mode, so we detect if someone's accidentally popped two drives. We kind of freeze everything up. So
and go, wait a second, yeah, let's
wait. I don't think you guys really meant to do this.
So. I didn't know that.
Yeah, we have that support.
Okay,
let's.
We've just geeked up pretty successfully talking about RAID and multiple drives and how much gigabytes and all of that. And the thing that's important is you use this and you store your data, you know that it's safe.
Exactly.
And you can access it from multiple computers.
The ease of use is really key here. You literally just plug it into your network. And I know not everybody has a network at home. And a network is such a big word. But if you've got internet connectivity, you've got a router, or you've got a DSL or cable modem, all you need to do is get a hub or a switch. And all that does is let you share multiple computers. You plug this into that hover switch.
And I got to recommend, if you're not really sure how to do the home network thing, there's a lot of tutorials on it. But you can also just go to your local store that sells things like this and talk with them about it. One thing to do before you go into the store is to take a look at what you have that's your modem. Look at the back of it, count the plugs, and kind of look at and just try to describe them to yourself. And then go into the store and say, I've got this at home. How do I hook up multiple computers? How do I do a network? And the solution is not that hard.
Now, is the Ethernet port on the back of this auto switching?
It is.
So you could actually attach it directly to a computer?
Yes.
That's cool.
So it can function just like a FireWire drive or a USB drive?
Through the Ethernet port, yeah, it's possible.
What are the USB ports on the back of that for?
The USB ports are for external connectivity, like if you wanted to hook up a printer, a USB hard drive, or even if you have a battery backup device, you can monitor the device will automatically monitor the battery level.
And one other thing that's really great about this that Sean was showing me yesterday is hooking it up and actually doing a kind of a tunneling from your IP address to it and using it externally from your home to access your files. So last night I wanted to give, or yesterday, where I wanted to give Sean some pictures of his kid and emailing them. They were really big files. I didn't want to email them. So I connected to his NAS through a web server and just uploaded the files, and he was able to download them and see his pretty baby.
Yep, and now they're on my NAS, and they're protected.
Right, you'll have them forever.
So it's not like I had to email those somewhere else or get them on another computer. They're on my networks. It's really cool.
Yeah, the ReadyNAS device supports, web shares and FTP. So for a lot of that remote access that you guys are talking about there, where we understood that.
Right.
And, speed for these devices doesn't play a factor over the internet. It's about availability.
The connection is the slowest point.
The connection is the slowest point.
Now, what about security? If I put this and everybody can see it and I don't want to share necessarily my tax records.
There's actually three security modes on this NAS device. The first one is most basic, is the share password. You put a password on the share. And so
through HTTP.
If the guy knows the password, then he can get in. The second is if you want to create users and groups on the NAS device, you can also do that and assign permissions accordingly. And then the third is if you're more enterprise, you've got a more enterprise setup at your house or at your office, we integrate well with Windows Active Directory domain. So
really?
Yeah, we support a domain integration there.
So are you guys using Windows as an operating system on this?
No, we use a version of Linux.
That you've built yourselves?
Yes.
Excellent.
Yeah, I was noticing they actually built their own chip. EXT3 support there.
Mm. Yep. A lot of our software engineers came from VA Linux, so that's just a little history of where they came from.
Got it.
GeekSpeak is supported by Business with Pleasure, a full-service business center in Felton, offering computer rentals, printing, design, shipping, delivered office supplies, Notary Public, and more. Information is online at businesswithpleasure.com. You're listening to GeekSpeak. Our phone numbers are available for you. 476-2800, toll-free at 1-800-655-5877. Rick Filman awaits your calls with questions or comments about technology. He'll pipe you through to us, and we'll confuse you on air. Or you can go to geekspeak.org and click on Contact Us, and we'll take care of your dilemma.
KUSP.org is growing to provide our listeners with better access to all of our great programming. Podcasts and on-demand audio archives are available for Talk of the Bay, Geek Speak, Youthtopia, Live at Lunch music sessions, and more. Plus, new shows are being added all the time. Hear what all the fuss is about at KUSP.org.
This program is supported by CruiseIO, providing local and nationwide internet services, including DSL 6.0, spam filters, and virus protection. Information about CruiseIO membership is available online at cruiseio.com or by calling 459-6301. This is Central Coast Public Radio, KUSP. You're listening to Geek Speak. My name's Lyle Troxell. In the air with me, Miles Elam, Drew Meyer, Sean Cleveland, and of course our guest Sam Fang from Infront Technologies. We're talking about NAS. I always want to say NAS storage solutions, but NAS devices, or network attached storage. And we're talking about in general managing your data at home. That's really what this is about. The potential to have your data secure and safe all in one place, pretty appealing. Unfortunately, not cheap to some degree. Is this device, like, for example, your kind of premier device with empty, is it more or less than a refrigerator in cost?
I guess it's about the price of a mid-level refrigerator now.
Okay, mid-level refrigerator. Yeah. So if you want to know the price, just go down to your local refrigerator store and check it out.
It doesn't keep anything cold. Don't get confused.
Oh, that's right.
That's right.
Now, with hard drives in it, like these, Sean put 400 or 500 gig hard drives. That's some price as well. I mean, what do those run, Sean?
As much as a refrigerator?
Four or 500 gig
hard
drives?
They're going to run you $400 to $500 for good ones.
Yeah.
And so none of the models come with hard drives in them, Sam? Is that the deal?
No, the different models have the different drive capacities already preloaded.
Okay, so you don't have to think about that if you don't want to.
It's interesting. I understand completely that not everyone's that's listening to the show is going to need one of these or get one of them. I think everyone sees the potential and the benefit of it. If they're using a computer, they see it.
Now,
especially if they've lost a drive.
Lyle, up to this point, when you bought one of these units, you pretty much had to buy it pre-configured,
yeah.
Or you had to buy all the drives and make sure they were matching sizes, and then that's what you went with. But Infront actually has our own flavor of RAID called X-RAID, and with it you can put one hard drive in and start using it, and then add hard drives as you want, and then you get more protection and more space.
I have an earlier unit at home, and I've got 2 300-gig drives in it. And I started with one, and it worked flawlessly putting that 31 in. It just kind of figured it out and striped my, or mirrored my information, and it was great.
So, Sam, how does that work?
Well, so, you know, with the X-ray technology, again, we kind of geeked out a little bit on talking about RAID a little bit earlier, and most consumers probably aren't going to bother to try and figure out what that is. So with our X-ray technology, what we've done is we've automated all of that for you. You know, so you just pop however many hard drives that you have in there, and we'll figure out the rest for you. You know, whether to run it in a single drive mode or a mirrored configuration or a RAID 5. We handle all of that.
Now, will that cost me performance if I don't use RAID 5 and I use X-ray?
No, actually, the X-ray performance is slightly higher than RAID 5 performance on our box.
Oh, really?
So, yeah.
And it still protects everything.
It still protects everything. Actually, we default to redundancy more than just the raw capacity. So, you know, like as Sean said, if you want to start with just one hard drive, you can. You pop in that second drive, we automatically start mirroring the data for you.
Mm-hmm.
And then the really neat thing is when you pop in that third drive, we change from a mirrored arrangement to that parity protected mode for you, so that you get as much protected capacity as is technically possible right now.
From Santa Cruz, Mark, welcome to Geek Speak.
Hi, good morning.
Good morning.
Love the program. Great, very topical for me because I'm spending a lot of time these days trying to sort out exactly what to do for building something along these lines. The question that I had was, if I have a drive failure in this box, how do I get notified of that? Is there any kind of audible alarm, or do I have to poke at it with some kind of admin utility from time to time to see what it looks like?
So there's actually two ways the box you can figure out if a hard drive fails. There's the status lights on the front. We kind of debated that audible alarm thing out for a while, and most people thought that would probably be too annoying. So there's the status lights on the front. If a drive has failed, you know, you'll get a blinking light indicating which drive has failed. In addition to that, our box is constantly monitoring, obviously, if the hard drives are there, even the drive temperatures. And what it'll do is it'll send you an email alert saying, you know, hey, this drive has failed. Please replace me. And then the last way is our administrative interface is completely browser-based. So you can go in there, and I think Sean might have some screenshots of it in the review. I'm not sure. But there's a little status tab on there that kind of tells you, okay, what drives are in there, what the temperatures are at, and if it's good or not.
Yeah, the email one, I think that's the greatest. I was thinking, gosh, where am I going to put my box? I'm probably going to put it, like, in a closet somewhere, unfortunately, and I won't be looking at the lights every day.
But here's the thing. If you, God forbid, you have a fire, you know, what do you want? What would you grab first? So if this is where you have all of your personal pictures,
my kids,
and content and that sort of thing, you want it close at hand. And that's what I like about the handle on the back. You can just grab this thing and run out the door. So it's something to think about.
Sean, do you...
And also in a closet? your airflow is going to be terrible,
yeah.
and you're going to risk running your drives really hot, which will reduce the lifespan of your drives.
More technically, I'm going to put mine in the roof of my attic, unfortunately, because of flooding. Mm-hmm. But
where it's nice and warm.
But I do have a ladder nearby, so I'll definitely grab it if it starts to flood, which is my concern more than fire. Okay, great. Let's go ahead and...
So something else I wanted to talk about really quick.
Well, first let's say goodbye to Mark. Mark, did you have any other questions?
Nope, that's great. Thanks. Good. I sure appreciate it, guys.
Good luck on making your data safe and secure. Thanks for calling.
Thanks very much. See you.
So you guys aren't just a company who builds these devices with hard drives and your flavor of RAID. I mean, you actually design the chip that powers the whole unit.
That's correct.
Tell us a little bit about the processor.
So it's a very specialized ASIC. It's got a 32-bit RISC core.
What's an ASIC?
ASIC is an application-specific integrated circuit.
This chip is designed specifically for this function.
Exactly. Mm-hmm. My boss had the vision 4 years ago that the space would get pretty hot, and he just set about to design a chip specifically for this application. And so far, we're happy to report that it's playing out exactly as we kind of envisioned.
So when we talk about these features of like the one drive going in, another drive it automatically making it mirrored, and then a third drive it starts striping and mirroring, mm-hmm. and doing all that, that's all the chip decided to do?
That's the chip and coupled with the software. Mm-hmm. So
why are you building these devices then? Most chip companies make chips, and they sell those chips to other companies who make the devices, but you guys... You're doing the whole thing. I mean, I find that really, it's incredible.
Is that why the enclosure is so cool? It's because you actually are building it in-house?
Yeah, actually, we designed it, and that's why, the engineers had a lot of say and input into this. And so the part of the reason that we're doing what we're doing is because the market's still pretty new, as everybody kind of, especially for the consumer space. And so we decided, we're going to kind of prove to the world that the world needs a product like this, and on top of that, we had the engineering talent. So we said, hey, what the heck, why not? And we went forward and did it. And I think that really makes us different with a lot of our competitors right now in this space, is that we have this storage expertise, not just computer consumer electronics expertise, but the fact that our engineers come from a storage background. It really it puts us in a huge advantages compared to some of the other competitors in this space.
Yeah, it's interesting that you guys do the whole thing, and it differentiates you from the others who make a part. They use parts from other companies, and they try and make it all work together.
Well, I'm sure Infront doesn't actually make the power supply, right? I mean, you still do buy other parts, right?
Yeah, we try not to.
Yeah, power supplies are difficult. All right, I want to invite people to call in with any kinds of questions of comments and technology. We can handle anything. We just might not answer it correctly. The phone numbers are 476-2800, toll-free at 1-800-655-5877. Or you can go to geekspeak.org and check out today's show. Really wonderful article about the product we're talking about. And you can find out all the gritty details. And also you can click on Contact Us to send us an email, and we'll answer that. Anybody looking at email so we can make sure we get it? Miles, you take care of that, or Drew? It doesn't matter. Anyway, we'll get your email. We'll get your phone call. Rick Philman's standing by. Again, the phone numbers. You can ask about anything you'd like. Hard drives failing, a good topic. How to install Windows XP. Anything you want. 476-2800, toll-free at 1-800-655-5877. Sean?
We do have a question. It's a little off topic, but it's from Robert from Santa Cruz. Is there a way to search a web page for a word using Mac OS? I switched from PC to Mac, where I could use the Google Word Search feature, and I really miss this feature.
What is the Google Word Search feature? Do you have any? Does anyone know?
Silence descends. Let me just jump on Google and take a look here.
I don't use that feature.
How does it work in Mac?
So, is there a way to search a web page for a word using Mac OS? I switched from PC to Mac, where I could use the Google Word Search feature, and I really miss this feature.
Command F.
Is it find?
I mean.
Just like in Microsoft, a control F?
Yeah, I don't know. I don't know what
Don't understand the question, Robert. Send us another email to clarify.
Or give us a call.
Clarify.
Give us a call.
We're mystified.
What's the number, Lyle?
476-2800, toll-free at 1-800-655-5877. And that was from memory. After 5 years, I can actually do that from memory. I'm really impressed with myself.
Now, if we could understand it when you said it. Machine gun boy.
Okay, everyone. 476-2800.
Yes.
1-800-655-5877. And that toll-free number only works in California. So if you're outside of the California, email us. All right, or make a long-distance call. The area code's 831 for the first number. And let's go ahead and start taking some calls because we got them. in Santa Cruz. Dave, welcome to GeekSpeak.
Hi, can you hear me?
We can.
Yeah, hearing about the RAID storage device got me thinking about what I could really use for convenience would be a single redundant storage device that I could that was small enough I could take it back and forth from my home, use on my laptop at home, and then hook it up to my desktop at work.
Well, how strong are you?
Yeah, well, I'd like to be able to bring it on my bicycle also. So something that's significantly smaller than a laptop, but I might only need 100 gigs, say.
So, Dave, why don't you want to use a USB or FireWire direct attached drive? Or have you thought about that?
Well, are there devices like that that will also do the mirroring so I don't have to worry about losing everything?
I understand that. Now, the other question is, why do you want to physically carry it when you could put it somewhere and access it over the web?
Yeah, that would be okay also. Maybe if there's such a thing available already, that would be better.
Most of these entry-level NAS products that are in the, I don't know, $1,500 range and below have that capability, and there's three or four of them brands out there, and if you put it in a safe place, like Lyle was talking, he was thinking about his attic so it wouldn't get flooded, or you know, put it in a closet as long as it has some sufficient air circulation, then it'll be quiet and out of sight, but it's always available on the network, and that's really part of the magical selling feature.
And you can even hook it through so it's available outside your home network and out at work.
Right.
Out of curiosity, do you have high-speed access at home?
Yeah, I have DSL.
This
is
the way to go, then.
It's a lot cheaper to move electrons around than move this thing.
You know what? I'm thinking of a new product here.
What's that?
So notebook hard drives are 90 to 120 gigs in size. They're built for high impact and shock. And what about a little a little device that has two of these? They're mirrored together.
Yeah.
Yeah, but you're still riding your bicycle with hard drives.
Yeah,
just not,
you are, it's not worth the risk.
You know, what's the chance of destroying both of them if you drop the drive? I don't know.
I think if you fall
in the closet, the chances are zero.
I think you're better served with those items. Something came out recently that was a 30-gigabyte solid state.
Yeah, flash.
So if you do two of those together, and they're really small because they're in the format of a laptop hard drive, that
do four of those with RAID. That would be cool.
There's no moving parts.
Yeah.
Now we got a real niche market. Let's chase it.
Yeah, it's the whole issue with hard drives being a spinning platter.
Yeah, right. Dave, I think the solution of having your storage at home and safe, or at the office and safe, if you can do that, and then copying your data over. This box has a thing called rsync, which allows you to kind of, as you change things on one thing, it'll change it on the other box. So you can kind of, as you work on your computer at work, maybe you have a certain folder that you want to have copies of at home, it would automatically copy those for you and have them at home.
I think I like that.
I think that's the way to go for you.
So take it, beg your IT guy at work to put this in the server closet, and you'll be safe, and then access it from home all the time.
And you can see all the gritty details at geekspeak.org, just today's show, which is, of course, the 25th of March. Thank you, Dave, for the call.
The calls are really coming in, Lyle.
Yeah, we're full up right now.
We're backing up. We love it.
All right, from Salinas, Richard, welcome to GeekSpeak.
Good morning. I have a question about printing. I manage a 16-computer network. It's learning. It's for teaching. So they're all students on the network, so they're not real computer literate to start. The computers have, there's a print server and then one computer that shares a printer. And in Windows XP, it has some function that allows the computers, I guess, to browse the network and find printers. And then you get these auto printer printer names. When you look at the printers and faxes and look at all the printers on a particular computer, you have the printers that are on your network.
It sounds like everything's perfect. That's exactly what you want, right? What's the problem?
Well, sometimes a computer might die, so I might attach a computer to or a printer to another computer.
Right, so you have to keep the computer on all the time.
Well, when I fix the computer that broke and put the printer back, that computer that once had the printer, which is no longer there, still is
shows up on the Discovery.
Broadcasting. Uh-huh. Yeah,
You have to remove the printer share from that computer.
Read about the help in Windows. This is a pretty common, pretty simple thing. It has to do with the way your printer is broadcasting its identity. Your computer that had the printer on it is telling
it's really easy. Go to the Start menu, go to Programs, and printers and faxes.
Yeah.
Right. And you'll see the printer listing there.
It'll still be there because the computer still thinks that the printer might be turned on again, right?
So it might be turned off.
It just keeps the driver information.
So in the printers and faxes dialog, just right-click on the printer and delete it.
Or I've done that, and it still pops up. And is there a way to get rid of all that auto stuff, just turn that whole feature thing off?
Yes, there is. I don't have the answer, anybody? Nope. I think you got us on being able to answer it right off the bat. But it's the deleting the printer. I wasn't thinking that Sean was going to suggest to delete the printer. I would suggest turning off the sharing of that printer.
Sure. But also, you need to remove the shares from the clients who are accessing that specific computer.
Yeah. Right, because they've been added to them as well.
Because they'll go out and look for that every time they come on the network.
There's a lot of work involved. You're going to have to go to every machine and fix the share.
What you really need is a print server.
He's got one of those too.
I do that, and
it shows up again.
Coming back.
Yeah, because that one machine is still broadcasting that printer exists.
We think, anyway.
Yeah, that's what I'm thinking. I think you should go into that computer that had the printer for a little while and turn off its sharing, and then you should be okay. That's my thought on it, my kind of guess without being in front of your computers. Good luck.
Yeah. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Richard, for the call.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye. All right, let's go to Santa Cruz. Paul, welcome to Geek Speak.
Hello.
Hello, Paul.
Hi. I had a question. I'm going to build a game machine for my son and myself in the next year, and I always use Asus motherboards, and I'm looking at the graphic card. I'm thinking about the GeForce line, the scalable link interface.
You don't want to go with NVIDIA. They don't know what they're doing. I'm kidding. Sean here.
I was looking at the Crossfire from ATI. They seem to have a little problem with that, and I'm just reading the reviews, and SLI seems like it's been going well from the start, and I have a lot of friends who use GeForce, and I'm using ATI right now. And
are you planning on doing SLI?
Eventually, yeah. I mean, I buy both video cards at the same time, but I'm looking, because I like Asus motherboards so much, I was wondering, doesn't Asus have a video card line, and are they running the NVIDIA chip?
Let's get that to our graphics expert.
Asus does make both NVIDIA and ATI-based video cards.
When we're talking about video cards, they're basically ATI and NVIDIA. Those are video card manufacturers, or the chip makers, and then a whole bunch of other companies use their chips.
Yeah, and SLI is Scalable Link Interface, and it allows you to run two video cards in parallel, and then ATI has a technology called Crossfire that allows you to do the same thing.
I've seen more success with SLI with NVIDIA for doing that.
Yeah. So, is there an advantage since I like? Would the Asus motherboard run the Asus video card better?
No,
it wouldn't.
No, that doesn't matter.
I mean, the drivers wouldn't be more compatible or anything.
They're not aware.
There might be some software that Asus has made.
Yeah.
For their own hardware that maybe gives you access to overclocking or temperature.
All these manufacturers,
you know, from the cards.
There
could be some proprietary software.
All these manufacturers, though, of hardware, they test each other's hardware on their boxes and such. They have to do that. So Asus is just as comfortable recommending a different video card for their motherboards as their own.
If you bought a different manufacturer video card, it should run just fine on an Asus.
I want to say really clearly, you said something that really got me. If you're not planning on doing two video cards off the bat, then you have to go with SLI, because ATI's video card what is it called again?
Crossfire.
Crossfire is a paired solution. Isn't that right, Sean?
It's a paired solution.
Right. Well, you have to have a MasterCard.
You pretty much have to buy them at the same time. I don't think you do. But you'd have to buy a MasterCard and run that and make sure you didn't get a MasterCard the second time. It's going to be more of a pain.
So what are you saying? You're saying so if I buy only one video card up front, because
there's a price
problem there. I mean,
You can add a second video card later.
Correct. Yeah. And then the other thing is, when you talk about video card, like you can buy the Asus video card to do SLI is actually an NVIDIA video card that Asus manufactured.
So it uses an NVIDIA GPU.
Can someone else besides Sean recommend NVIDIA over ATI? Does anyone feel comfortable doing that?
I'm not good enough at this to know.
Well, I go with my gamer friends. I'll let them be my guinea pig.
That sounds good.
They get good. I know run some really high performance systems.
That's the way to go, because if you have problems, that's who you're going to turn to.
Okay,
and high-end gamers are probably going to say AMD and NVIDIA at this point, but they might not. Yeah.
Yeah, because I've always been running AMD.
Yeah.
All right, so AMD and then...
AMD currently holds the performance crown.
Do you have one more question for us?
I have one system that's running Windows XP Professional, and the other one is running Windows 2000 Professional. Is there any advantage of one operating system over the other?
For gaming? Or just in general?
What?
Just for gaming?
For gaming. That's the hardest thing we do on our machine.
No.
Not really. I didn't think so. Okay.
All right, good luck. All
right, thank you.
Thank you. I would say, though, that if you're doing SLI, you probably want to be with XP, not Windows 2000. Okay.
Oh, wait, what was I thinking? Like XP versus 2000? XP was not a gaming platform.
Yeah, it's
not. It's told to be XP.
Yeah, 2000 was not a gaming platform.
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay, so we misspoke. XP, definitely.
For yeah, XP, right. Definitely, yes.
Next caller.
Yeah, I don't know where you're calling from, Gabriel, but welcome to GeekSpeak. Where are you calling from?
Hey, yeah, it's just an area code. I mean, a zip code. It's a historic town. Way back in the day.
And it's Holon?
Yeah, J-O-L-O-N, Holon. There's just a military post out there. Hey, how's it going? Question for you. I was driving around out here in the middle of nowhere, and I was listening to radio, and you were talking about that NAS device, the system about backing up. I take a bunch of pictures and a whole bunch of video. I have a Sony Vaio that runs on XP, and my girlfriend has a Mac Pro.
And you want to share content between each other?
Right, and I want to see if there was any problem, if there would be any problem. Because
yesterday when I used this product to send content to Sean, I was on a Mac and he was on a Windows machine. So
the answer is it solves your problem.
This is the perfect solution for you.
Yeah, what operating systems does the ReadyNAS support?
It supports, obviously, the Windows flavors, the Macintosh flavors, and also the Linux, Unix guys, too.
And is it using Apple's file protocol, or is it using NFS, the Unix to file?
It is, actually. We support, for the geeky guys out there, we support SIFS for the Windows guys, AFP natively for the Mac guys, and then NFS natively for the Linux and Unix guys. And I think we're one of the few products.
So does that mean that I can connect on my Mac through AFP as a share, and Sean can connect to the same drive through NTFS, and we can both see the data? And
as long as both those protocols are enabled on the NAS.
Yep, that's no problem.
I like it.
And it supports FTP and HTTP and HTTPS. Go to the review. There's a screenshot. You can see it all.
Geekspeak.org. Today's show is the March 11th, 25th. Wow, that was strange.
25th.
Gabriel, thank you so much for the
all
call.
Right, thanks a lot.
All right, Pacific Grove. Laird, welcome to GeekSpeak.
Hi, guys.
Hi.
Hey, thank you very much for sharing all your knowledge. Got a question for you. I use a... I transfer a lot of digital video to my computer to make DVDs.
Yep.
And I use Roxio right now as the program of choice to be able to do that.
To transfer or to burn?
Pardon me?
To transfer the data or to burn the CDs?
Well, to transfer the data and then also to burn them and also to manipulate the files so I can have them the way that I would like to have them from a content standpoint.
Sure. Okay.
What happens is I find that it takes up so much of my hard drive because the files are so big. I'm transferring probably 120 minutes of a mini DVD tape onto the system.
Right.
Yep. You're the reason that Sam is in business.
Okay. Yeah. Well, that's why. That's why I wanted to. I have a Sony Vaio system that I use. But is there an external drive that would be one fast and dependable that they can also handle a lot of memory?
Sam, can you edit video and play video and such from this box over Ethernet?
Actually, you can. Standard definition video, for sure. We were actually, I don't know if you read the Video Maker magazine or anything like that.
Religiously. No, I'm just kidding.
But we were in the, our storage device was featured in there, and they really liked it. So
is that a gigabit Ethernet port?
It's a gigabit Ethernet port on the back.
So that's kind of the big question here, is the link between the storage and the computer is going to be your bottleneck. And Jim, when you're editing right now inside your computer between the storage and the motherboard is a really fast connection, but when you go out to a network or to a USB or firewire, sometimes that gets a little slower. So what Sam's saying is his network connection on the file server is extremely fast. It can go 1,000 megabits per second, but most people's home networks run at about 100 megabits per second. So your bottleneck's going to be that 100 megabit connection. So you might want to investigate that a little bit, but it's certainly possible to do this.
Your Vaio might have gigabit on it.
It's possible, yeah. The Vaio might have a chip that runs at 1,000, and then you got to check your router.
And if that's the case, what you would do, if you didn't have the router, for example, you could plug your Vaio directly into this box and mount it that way and edit video and blah, 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 and then plug it back in your network if you want to do that.
Conceptually, Drew, you're in great shape, but we don't know about the mechanics of exactly your situation.
Drew, you also work for a storage solution that does kind of the same type of stuff, network appliance. Do you also offer boxes that allow people to edit video? Is this a common thing?
NetApp makes servers that are designed for businesses, and our product start at $20,000. So yeah. It's the same idea, but it's on a much, much larger scale. And there are other companies out there. Anthology Solutions makes a product, and Snap Appliance makes a Snap server. It's kind of the oldest product in this category. Anybody else, Sam?
Yeah, there's another company from Japan called Buffalo.
Oh, Buffalo Networks. They've made a big splash with their Terra Station, giant, huge box. Sam's is much more elegant, in my opinion. But they're all good. They're all out there, and they all have similar features. So,
Sam, HD content. Can I stream it?
Sam?
Yes, sir.
You there?
Yeah. HD content.
HD content, it really depends on what format. And again, I apologize, I'm not a huge video editing expert, but I think the
over gigabit Ethernet, theoretically...
It's possible, yeah.
It's possible to stream uncompressed HD content. 124 megabytes per second required, 125 megabytes per second, you know...
Available
under ideal conditions.
But when I was at CES and I was talking to a lot of these video enthusiasts, they were naming off all these different HD formats that I didn't even, you know, it's just HD, right? there's a ton of these different formats. So I'd recommend that anybody do some research first on what format that you're working on first, and then we can figure out from there.
You know what? I'm going to test this myself pretty heavily. so look to the review in another week or two, and we'll do an update.
Laird, thanks
good luck,
so much
Laird.
For the
call.
Great, thank you.
You're on the right track.
I think we'll take one more call from Moss Landing. Jim, welcome to Geek Speak.
Hello.
Hi, what's your question?
Oh, this is a kind of a semi-literate question, but something's been driving me nuts. I have Windows XP, and I had this persistent pop-up. It's not just on the web pop-up, but it comes up all the time. It's a Windows Security Center warning, Windows Firewall detected suspicious network activity on your computer, blah, 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 malicious software codes try to steal your privacy information, such as credit card numbers, electronic mail accounts, and financial data or passwords. Do you want to learn how to protect your computer? Yes or no? And if you click either one, nothing really happens. The thing goes away. But I saw something about VX2 virus, and I got the VX2 scrubber from AdAware.
Are you running generic virus protection software?
I have AdAware that I run. I don't have a firewall type thing.
But do you have virus protection?
No.
Okay, I would recommend getting virus protection. You might have a virus. You probably do. It sounds like you do. We like Grisoft here at the Geeks like Grisoft. Drew, you want to spit out that URL?
Man, we had a bunch of calls on this last week after the show, so be careful when you write this down. It's http://// free, like as in free software, dot Grisoft, Grisoft.
Okay.
Golf Romeo India Sierra October F. What's F, you guys? I don't know. Frank
okay,
Tango.
Okay, I got it.
Foxtrot Tango. And then com. C-O-M.
Okay.
Sean, will you throw that URL up on the show page for today?
Excuse me? Yeah, we'll. Okay. Yeah.
We'll post that on our website, geekspeak.org.
Definitely run virus protection. It's got they got a great product that's free, and it updates all the time. And it's,
okay.
It's
and AdAware wouldn't take care of the same stuff?
No.
Yeah, you watch out. And it's cheap to get. There's three main brands. It's Symantec, McAfee, and Trend Micro. All three of those are good. They have subscription services that'll cost you like $20 or $30 a year. It's totally worth it for the hassle you might go through if you get it.
Jim, thank you very much for the call. Sam Fang is Director of Marketing at Infront Technologies, maker of network attached storage devices like the ReadyNAS NV, which we've got a review up on geekspeak.org. The Geeks this morning with Sean Cleveland, Drew Meyer, Miles Elam. Our phone answer today was Rick Philman. Thank you all for participating on GeekSpeak. And thank you for listening to GeekSpeak. GeekSpeak is a registered service mark of online tonight with David Lawrence and is used by permission. This program is supported by a grant from Santa Cruz Electronics, offering an extensive selection of computer and electronic parts as well as support services. Santa Cruz Electronics is open daily at 2808 Soquel Avenue and online at santacruzelectronics.com. This is Central Coast Public Radio, KOSP Santa Cruz, KBH San Ardo, streaming live and podcasting at kosp.org. For KOSP and GeekSpeak, I'm Lyle Troxell.